There was a silhouette of a beefeater on a hill.
Yeah, not great.
Jeff had sat on something damp and was now trying to feel what it might be with his fingers in such a way that the other mourners didn't think him disrespectful.
Not bad.
I was stood on three tin cans and peering over a fence when I saw her for the first time.
No.
Smoke filled the greenhouse.
I'm trying to write a novel. I made the decision a little while back that it would be a good thing to do. I've written a lot of poems and texts and checks, but I wanted to push myself. A novel would stretch me artistically, make me rich and make my parents proud, but I've got a bit stuck.
Miriam wiped some tears from her bust and etched letters into the condensation that had formed at her window.
I'd bought coffee, candles and paper. My pencil was desperate to get going, but I just couldn't think of a first line.
It was a bright, cold day in April, and the clocks were striking 13, Orwell, 1984. There was no possibility of taking a walk that day. Bronte, Charlotte, Jane Eyre. Fox, socks, box, knocks. Zeus, fox in socks. It was the best of times, it was the worst of times. It was the age of wisdom.
Every book's great journey begins with the first sentence. So many authors have fought and won this battle. And yet here I am, stumped. What's my problem? I must have read 100 novels over the years, and each began with a first line. But what are these lines doing? And what inspired their writers to come up with them? This is the story of my quest to unlock the secret of the first line, to understand its function, befriend it, and ultimately, to construct one of my own. A real purler. And then my novel will be underway.
Clive's dagger was almost unrecognisably bloody.
Clearly I needed help in my quest. I thought I'd better see my agent to explain my plan. He'll take 15% of anything I make out of this book. I've also made a list of esteemed experts and authors whose ear I can bend. To set the ball rolling, here are writers, critics and all-round literary colossi, Maureen Freely and John Sutherland, sages you'll hear throughout my journey.
The first sentence of a novel sets up everything, absolutely everything. One of my favourite authors, Mario Vargas Llosa, said, if you get the first sentence right, you have 95% of your job as the author finished.
The first line is like the pistol shot at the beginning of a sprint race. Yes. It sets out the rules of the game, the sense of what kind of novel it will be, what kind of questions it will pose. It is that moment of coupling or copulation that all engagement with fiction requires. You know, sort of open the door for the reader to enter.
So I'm at Simon Trewin's office, a literary agent. Hi.
Hi, Tim. So you've got something you want to talk to me about? More poetry?
No, I'm thinking of writing a novel.
Do you think the world really needs another novel?
Reading novels is not that easy. We do it automatically, like we ride bicycles. But the whole series of conventions that happen in novels that require a very, very sophisticated training. This is real, it isn't real, this is someone you've never met. First lines have an important role to play in all that. It's a bit like tuning on an old-fashioned radio dial. That's to some extent you have to adjust. The first line, if you like, is hitting the station exactly. You hear it clearly without any static or buzz.
Specifically, I'm just sort of trying to get started, really.
I mean, I think an opening line needs to intrigue you. There needs to be a sort of come-hither look. It's about instant engagement. So let's try an exercise here, and I'm going to ask you to hold something. It's a Nielsen Gold Book Award, which is given for sales of 500,000 copies of Dawn French's first book.
It's a very specific award.
And this is what you're aspiring towards. Now, this is her debut novel here, and I want you to read the opening line of this.
Chapter 1, Dora, brackets, 17 years. My mother is like a totally confirmed A-list, bloody, cooking, minging, arsehole, cretin, cockhead of the highest order. Fact.
It was cocking, not cooking, but still.
Cooking. Cocking.
Cocking. I mean, to me, that's a great opening line. There's an immediate sense of character, personality and attitude there that makes you want to engage with that character.
She sets her stall out.
It is a truth universally acknowledged that a single man in possession of a good fortune must be in want of a wife. Austin, Pride and Prejudice. Happy families are all alike. Every unhappy family is unhappy in its own way. Tolstoy, Anna Karenina. Mr. Fussy was fussy about everything. Hargreaves, Mr. Fussy. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. The Bible. God. Judeo-Christian. Whether I shall turn out to be the hero of my own life.
The propositional opening line, and I suppose the classic would be David Copperfield. Whether I shall turn out to be the hero of my own life, or whether that station will be held by anybody else, these pages must show. When you read that, it's kind of branded on your sensibility. So as you go through the novel, those opening words ring in your mind. You measure everything that's happening against those opening lines. I mean, there's another more famous example in Tale of Two Cities. It was the best of times, it was the worst of times. What Dickens is doing there is stating something that you won't forget.
Simon has given me how many, 100?
I've actually compiled a list of the 100 best first lines of novels. I think we should take this very, very seriously.
Call me Ishmael.
And call me Simon, but...
Good, OK.
But I start by saying it's a truth universally acknowledged that a single man in want of a book deal must be in the possession of a good opening line.
Shall I read you a couple of mine?
Please, yeah.
It's actually horror. He didn't want to open his tent door.
Oh, that's it, yeah.
Yeah.
If you're sitting down at a cafe and the couple at the next table are having a conversation, which is not a secret conversation, because otherwise they wouldn't have it in the cafe, but they just say, I didn't pick up his socks this morning. You think, well, whose socks?
Sometimes, yes, sort of authors play little games with you. I'm probably, if you ask 1,000 people, particularly Americans, you know, what's the most famous first line in fiction, they come up with Herman Melville's, you know, call me Ishmael. Well, the point is that he's not called Ishmael. And we find out lots of things in Moby Dick, too much about how you harpoon whales, I think. But we never do find out what the hero is called, why it is he's chosen, even though he's a well-educated man, to run away to sea. It's a bit like cheese on the mousetrap. You know, you actually eat it, and then the trap comes down and catches you. Last night I dreamt of Mandalay again. Yeah, you don't know whether Mandalay is a place, a person, or a brand of fruit juice.
You got something a little bit longer?
Yes.
Okay.
This is Chiclet.
Great, very good market at the moment.
Lucy was such a ditzy so-and-so and a spendthrift to boot. She was trying to put her sock on and eat some Revita all at once, and the result saw her hopping around her Paddington apartment like a very attractive pneumatic drill.
I've read worse.
That's cut down from what it was. In a first draft, I said that there was primula on the Revita.
First lines... had to be very careful about rationing, you know, getting exactly the right amount of information. If you think of what has been the most phenomenally successful novel in terms of sales over the last 10 years, this is how it begins. Renowned curator Jacques Saunier staggered through the vaulted archway of the museum's grand gallery. Well, frankly, it stinks. I mean, starting any novel with the word renowned, who cares about the man's reputation? Bleeding to death, for God's sake. You don't want to know whether or not he's got the Légion d'honneur. Renowned, vaulted, a grand. You know, he's pumped too much steroid into a simple sentence.
I wish either my father or my mother, or indeed both of them, as they were in duty both equally bound to it, had minded what they were about when they begot me. Had they duly considered...
A bad first line is like bad breath, and I was worried my efforts stank. I needed to find some serious Listerine, and fast. I decided to go and see the literary equivalent of Listerine, Joe Dunthorne. Recently he published his first novel, Summerine, and he's currently putting the finishing touches to his second. This is an author who has cracked it. He has written his first line and pushed on through. Had he, like me, seen it as an impossible barrier?
If a writer has the confidence to begin in medias res, they know everything else. This author is going to tell me a story he already understands.
I am verily persuaded I should have made a quite different figure in the world from that in which the reader is likely to see me. Sterne. Tristram Shandy. It is Sunday morning. Joe Dunthorne. Submarine.
I did just have a kind of overwhelming terror of the first line. Suddenly you're kind of in the company of all these great writers and the expectation is on you. And I just thought, I don't want to compete, basically. I want to get it over and done with as quickly as possible. It Is Sunday Morning is basically saying, don't hate me yet.
Oh, it's like the first two episodes of The Apprentice. Yes. Just keep a low profile.
yeah, exactly. The whole time I was writing the rest of the book, I constantly edited the first page. And I've got, I should think, 40 first lines. I actually think quite a few of them would have wrecked the book. Here's one. This is all right. There was a time when I was open with my parents. Passable. Let's try this. I was sick on the bonnet of his car. All those lines are gone. I'm quite pleased to report.
So have you ever gone to your desk looking to start a novel and had writer's block?
No, it doesn't exist. It's just, you can write a bad sentence, that's fine, and you can write a bad story and a bad poem, but no one's really had writer's block. They've just had an unwillingness to be bad.
That's what I've got. Do you have any final piece of advice for me?
Lower your ambitions.
For a long time, I went to bed early. Proust, remembrance of things past. Well, Prince, so Genoa and Lucca are now just family estates of the Bonapartes. Tolstoy, War and Peace.
It's important to remember that not every great novel has a memorably great first line, but you do, as you're writing that first line, need to feel that you're inside this world you've created. There's something that I do with my fiction students at the University of Warwick. I give them first lines of stories and novels. I don't tell them where they're from. And I say, write a paragraph starting from this line. Sometimes they take the stories in interesting new directions, but almost always the tone is the same and the narrative goes more or less in the direction in which it was decreed by the voice. And what we discover is that the first lines actually open up a lot of possibilities and shut many more down. It's something you don't have to teach people. They just know what's consistent, you know, because we are a narrative culture and we're always telling stories.
He rolls a one.
So you've landed on novels 1900 to 1950.
Yes, I have, yes.
My friend, the gangly comedian Mark Watson, wrote his first novel in 2002 and is currently working on his fifth. He's also a brilliant stand-up, earning a very good living, thank you very much, by creating engaging, inch-perfect lines that hook his audience into story after story. Mark has also got a first-class degree in English literature and knows 70% more than I do about books.
In my younger and more vulnerable years, my father gave me some advice that I've been turning over in my mind ever since.
That does sort of ring a bell, but is it The Great Gatsby? Oh, that's marvellous. It is The Great Gatsby.
That's infuriating.
I'm very pleased with that. Give me one of those tokens, please.
I'd bought a board game based on guessing famous opening lines of books. We could observe the mastery of literary giants whilst also having fun. However, as he continued to destroy me with his education, he wondered if the answer was simple common sense.
Four.
Once upon a time, and a very good time it was, there was a moo cow coming down along the road, and this moo cow that was coming down along the road met a nice little boy called Baby Tuku.
So you're a novelist. Why would someone start like that?
If they were really odd, I think.
James Joyce, portrait of the artist as a young man. We don't want to get letters.
I sort of think the perfect first line probably has your character doing a thing, like so-and-so went and made himself a cup of tea. Straight away you know who you're dealing with.
Are there any ingredients that you always put into your first line?
Well, I think it's quite important to not have a really long first line so that even by the time you've read it, you think, oh, blimey. For example, a long description of nature, especially if it starts with someone saying, oh, there's a nice glade and this is in Wyoming or something.
I wonder if I should just read you a few of my opening lines. Maybe if you just indicate a number on the die.
Okay. Oh, you've got loads.
I've got 56. Chris didn't want to open his tent door.
I've given that a four. Straight away there's a bit of suspense. You get a little bit of a sense that Chris is a timid sort. And you placed it, so very nice. I'll almost go five on that.
Some of the things that Clement ate that summer were truly shameful.
Three, could be too quirky for some.
Nicola loved Smarties.
That certainly does what I was just saying. It sets the stall out very nicely. It doesn't convey a lot, does it?
No. I was driving between cities when the bombs dropped.
Yeah, very good. Five for that, I think. That one's in a different league. I mean, that's a very sort of loaded first line indeed. An ominous first sentence seems to be the way to go.
My literary agent drew the analogy, a first line being some kind of a come hither look from the book.
Yes, that's quite a good description, I think. You're sort of saying, well, I've clearly got a lot to offer. Here's just a tiny taste of what might be in store for you.
Every novel is different. They're as individual as we are as human beings. And so when you actually engage with a novel, it's like meeting a new person. And so to some extent, it's like a blind date, really. I mean, you look up and down the novel that you've chosen to start and see whether there's that spark.
Yes?
Oh, Simon, it's Tim.
It's 3 a.m.
Yep. I'm struggling to get going still.
It's 3 a.m.
Can I read you 350 of my first lines?
How did you get my mobile number?
The door to the lighthouse was jammed shut with what appeared to be...
Okay, Tim, write all of your lines down on postcards.
Already done it.
And then throw them out. I think you better nail what not to do before you can get any better.
Really?
How did you get my mobile?
Oh, I think I might know what the worst first line ever written is, Simon.
How did you get my mobile, Tim?
Sometimes we understand something by understanding what it is not. And you can learn from bad sentences because they imply their opposite.
It was a dark and stormy night.
It was a dark and stormy night.
It was a dark and stormy night.
That's just a little facile, a little easy.
The rain fell in torrents, except at occasional intervals.
And it was checked by a violent gust of wind.
Yeah, we want a writer to work a little harder than this.
Which swept up the streets.
For it is in London that our scene lies.
Yeah, a parenthetical remark in the middle of an opening sentence.
Rattling along the housetops and fiercely agitating the scanty flame of the lamp.
The scanty flame of the lamps.
The scanty flame of the lamps.
It's CS1 has wandered off task a little bit.
Fiercely agitating the scanty flame of the lamps that struggled against the darkness.
So we're just coming to this guy's little place in the country, Nebworth House. The door knocker is a beast, like a hippo.
Welcome to Paul Lytton's home.
Thank you for having us. Henry Lytton Cobbold is the great-great-great-grandson of the man who wrote that fateful first sentence, Edward Bulwer Lytton. It's from his 1830 Highwayman novel, Paul Clifford. Lauded in his time for his prolific literary output, the 1859 Encyclopaedia Britannica called Bulwer Lytton unquestionably the greatest living novelist in England, ahead of his friend Charles Dickens. He's best known now, though, for being the Shakespeare of bad first lines.
What doesn't seem to have been appreciated by all these people who've been scurrilously accusing him of silly opening lines is that the line is a gag. There is a character in the novel, Paul Clifford, the father of the heroine, Joseph Brandon, who speaks in that style. This is one long running gag through this book. Bulwer Lytton has been vilified for all these years for writing an absurd sentence at the front beginning of his novel, and yet the joke is on his critics.
And how much do you think he has been vilified?
He's been vilified to the extent that there's a competition named after him for the worst opening line of a novel. Can't get much more vilified for a line than that.
The Lytton family's nemesis is the dastardly professor Scott Rice from California.
We had a writing contest at San Jose State every year that the faculty is conscripted to be judges for, and that writing contest attracts a lot of bad writing. So it occurred to me, why not be honest and upfront and just say, we want bad writing? But we don't want to read a lot of bad writing, so I said, why not opening sentences? And then I thought, that's it, we'll call it the Bulwer Lytton Fiction Contest.
Are you not a fan of the competition?
Well, they say that all publicity is good publicity. The first defence is that to be the first one to come up with a cliché, to have a line that has become used so often that it's become comic, it's genius, pure and simple.
What we ask is that people compose bad opening sentences to imaginary novels. We say that the contest is aimed at people who have short-winded muses. You know?
Yeah. So do you have a few of your own favourites there?
Oh, yeah, I have a slew of them. Well, what about this one? Ace, watch your head, hissed Wanda urgently, yet somehow provocatively, through full, red, sensuous lips. But he couldn't, you know, since nobody can actually watch more than part of his nose or a little cheek or lips, if he really tries, but he appreciated her warning.
Well, here we are in his library. That whole bookcase over there is basically his work. a good 28 novels.
Let's have an opening line off. We're now grabbing,
I don't know what the opening line is, but let's
liberally off the shelves.
You're not going to find one that's funny, because he was specifically trying to be cheeky with that line.
This is my novel, volume 2.
What shall I call my novel? Yeah. Ah, my novel. There is at present so vehement a flourish of trumpets and so prodigious a roll of drums whenever we are called upon to throw up our hats and cry, huzzah, and to the march of enlightenment, that, out of the very spirit of contradiction, natural to all rational animals, one is tempted to stop one's ears and say, gently, gently, light is noiseless. How comes enlightenment to make such a clatter?
Yeah, no, that one's impossible. Is this whole novel one line?
He was obviously, this is clearly a sequel.
Each one of these entries to the contest is sort of a little distilled act of literary criticism. Here's one of my favorites. Just beyond the narrows, the river widens.
It seems to me that that's a bad first line because you lose all faith in the imbecile who's written it.
Exactly. You're thinking, somebody in this equation is not very bright, and I hope it's the writer.
I was worried. If I got this wrong, a Tim Key prize might spring up 150 years down the line. I galvanized myself for the final push. I would choose my least bad line, polish it up, and present it to my agent. But first, I had to expose myself to the most important group of experts of all, my readers. I bought the van after my wife died.
I don't know what it communicates to me. You know, did you buy it out of grief?
Did you buy it because your wife died, or was it just happened after?
It needs something to follow on to.
Well, exactly, so you keep reading, right?
Yeah, you like
it? I think it signals a whole, like, a complete change in this man's life. I guess he had a wife, he had one life, and he's going to start a whole new life, maybe on the road trip or something.
After a large curry, I hauled my swollen stomach down to the award-winning Brick Lane Book Group. Founded and run by the writer and broadcaster N. Quentin Wolfe, it is home to some of the sharpest amateur critics in London. I would tap into their reserves of literary knowledge. This would be my finishing school. Do any of you write?
Yes, a little.
How do you find the first line?
I drive myself crazy. My starting point has been in the past to write a children's story for my son. I started when he was 5. By the time I'd actually got through to the second chapter, he was 11.
I'll do a children's one. Daddy buried Patch, and Nick held his sister's hand, and Mummy was inside being interviewed by the police.
Is that a children's book?
Yeah, it's sort of children's stroke crime.
No. Kids actually like a bit of dark humour.
Yeah.
For a first sentence for a children's book, it's just got death and burial and grief.
It's just hard to see how it could get better, really.
Patch, this lovely dog, and he's dead.
I think Patch is a horse.
There's a great temptation amongst inexperienced writers who have been told by their editors that they have to grab the reader to go for cheap tricks. And it works just about as well as practicing the line that you're going to use when you go to that first big party. It's when you're trying hardest to be original that you're not original at all.
I suppose I should just throw a bit of sci-fi at you. Winter had fallen. The worst kind of Zithian winter. Winds bent the Bulverian trees sideways and the Furiods pulled their sky sheaths over their horns. And scuttled quickly back to their caves.
I like the sky sheaths, I don't know why.
Thank you for talking to me. Are there any final bits of advice? Anything that I should be trying to do with my opening line?
Don't try too hard. Because I feel like it's been overanalyzed almost.
You have to wait for that moment of inspiration to get that real clincher, that moment when all of the words come together in the right order, in the right place, and establish just the mood that you want it to. It's almost you have to be zen-like and wait for it to come to you.
Right. So I just had to wait. I retired to my flat and waited some more. Zen-like. Waiting. And then it came. Inspiration. Sure, I'd put in the groundwork. I'd taken advice from experts, readers, authors. I'd bent over my desk without sleep, seeking out rules, identifying pitfalls, chasing the elixir of a perfect opening line. And now, inspiration hit me. Something personal, apt, beautiful, suitable for my agent. He had assembled an audience of other agents and literary aficionados to judge my efforts, and now, finally, I had something for them. I plunged my final opening line into my pocket. I threw down my pen and I strode, with great purpose, to his offices.
There are no rules for a great first line. There's no magic formula. All writers have the right to write badly. The thing is, we want to end up with something that looks like it just came out all of a piece. But of course, novelists, what do? We lie. We lie well.
So this is Tim. He's my client, kind of. He spent the last 6 weeks constructing a first line for a novel he'll theoretically be writing. How many experts have you spoken to, Tim?
About eight.
Do you think you'll spend 6 weeks and interview eight experts for each line of the novel, Tim?
No, I don't think so. I hope not.
Right. So he's now going to read his first line to you all to see what we all think of it. On you go, Tim.
Okay. Hi, everybody. So it's autobiographical a bit. As the documentarist stared into the abyss, desperate to think of a line that would open his novel, and convulsing with the fear that this line also had to conclude his documentary and gain the approval of his agent, because he was delivering it at his agent's office, a thin...
It's quite long.
Yep. A thin, panicked sheen of sweat rose like dew between his shoulder blades, and our hero, suffering under his unique burden, flicked his eyes about the room and waited for the outro music, silently praying that it would come sooner rather than later.
Will you listen,